If you're looking for good stories about Baltimore, we recommend the Stoop Storytelling Series, a popular live event and podcast that features extraordinary true tales from ordinary folks. Find out about the Stoop's live shows and podcast at stoopstorytelling.com.
With Julia Child, it was the greatest moment of my entire life, I have to say. And I might even cry just thinking about it, quite frankly. She was an amazing woman. And I think she was maybe 6'2". She was very, very tall. She was not in the best of health when she came to Charleston. And even still, she was a vibrant, astonishingly kind and joyous personality. I mean, she walked in and you could feel her a presence the moment she walked into Charleston.
Welcome to Baltimore Boomerang, a podcast from Baltimore Magazine. We've combed through more than 100 years of our archives to revisit and update you on some of the magazine's most intriguing stories. Here's what we've found out.
For 21 years now, Chef Cindy Wolf has presided over the kitchen at Charleston, a fine dining temple in Harbor East. She's the chef that other Baltimore chefs admire, not only because of her 7 James Beard Award nominations as a finalist, but because she, along with her business partner, Tony Foreman, changed the fine dining scene in Baltimore, first with Savannah at the Admiral Fell Inn in 1995, followed by Charleston 2 years later in 1997. Charleston, with its seasonal French southern-inflected fare, has long been the place to celebrate special occasions. Wolf's Magrette of Duck, Shrimps and Grits, and Lobster Soup are so famous they are deserving of their own fan page. At Charleston, Wolf has cooked for the likes of luminaries like Julia Child, actor Daniel Craig, and wine guru Robert Parker. And when we spoke for a piece called Steel Magnolias that ran in Baltimore in March 2015, she bemoaned the fact that no one ever invites her to dinner. I do want people to invite me over, she said at the time. I don't know what I'd do if someone invited me to dinner at this point. I'd probably be nervous myself. So I'd like to welcome Chef Cindy Wolf to our Baltimore Boomerang podcast today. And Chef, you might be able to guess the first question that I have for you, which is, has that been rectified? Has anyone invited you to dinner since that story ran 3 years ago?
Yeah, hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. Yes, they have. And of course, I've probably said, you know, oh, I'll get back to you. And it's my fault in the end. You know, it's just timing and everything and probably a tiny, tiny bit of social anxiety on my own part, just from the standpoint. I mean, I love people, but, you know, I think it comes down to the idea of actually going over to somebody's house and suddenly I become a tiny bit panicky. But actually quite a few people have. And it's very sweet. And the response was pretty quick after your article. So
oh,
thank you,
Jane. Oh, I feel good about that. So does the panic come from worrying that you won't like what you're served or that
no,
you're nervous for them?
No,
or
I think it's just the whole, you know, because I only do one thing with my day. I'm so used to my work and the idea of sort of planning and getting myself out of the house on a Sunday. And in the end, as I've gotten older, I hate to say that out loud, but it's true. On Sunday becomes a little bit of a sacred day for me. You know, it's I need a day where I am down. And, you know, sometimes we do our radio show on Sunday morning. So after that, I really kind of need to just go home and relax. And I also like to cook at my house. And on top of that, especially when I had the farm. I mean, it was a great joy to be there. It was very hard for me to tear myself away from the farm, which is one of the reasons why I don't live there anymore. And it actually kind of comes back.
Which we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and it kind of comes back to what we're talking about. I really found myself to be isolated. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. But that's not good for anybody. I mean,
right.
you need to be a part of the world. And, you know, I am all week long. So I think, you know, in a way, getting back to saying, you know, I kind of need a down day where I'm just doing whatever I feel like doing. If I have the time for that, you know, I also prepare for the week. So it's kind of, I'm kind of always on. I realize that when I get up in the morning, I'm thinking about food. And when I go to sleep, I'm thinking about food. So, and I do a lot of research. So it's constant for me. So it's kind of hard for me to tear myself away from that routine after all these years. I mean, I'm 54. I've been cooking since I was 19.
So going back to Charleston, 21 years now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Right?
I can't believe how fast that's gone by.
Tell us what was on the menu the first day you opened. our listeners can't see this wonderful binder that you have of old menus. It's amazing that you saved them. So tell us about that first menu.
Yeah, it was really quickly we had gone from Savannah, the restaurant that we didn't own, but Tony and I put the concept in to the Admiral fell in. Tony renovated, or as I said, built the restaurant in 6 weeks. That is now Charleston. And because, you know, we had basically concrete and glass and steel like you guys had over here. And so it went very quickly. And because it was so soon after Savannah, it was really a very similar menu. I wanted to have a new approach. I definitely wanted it to be a change without losing the identity of Savannah, of course. But I mean, you know, 6 weeks isn't a long time to, you know, it's not like I became a whole new chef in 6 weeks, right? Especially since we were building a restaurant and concentrating on getting that done as quickly as humanly possible. And one of the reasons for that, too, was not only financial, but, of course, we had all of our servers, all of our cooks, they all left Savannah, except for just a couple of people, which we did not ask them to do. It was the circumstances were a little unusual, and that's what happened. And we had a whole bunch of people that needed work. So we really, Tony worked as, and the contractors, you know, were amazing and worked very hard to get us open. So the original menu, you know, I had a big menu, which I'm back to that now. It's interesting because there was a point in time, we renovated in 2005. And when we renovated, that's when we went to the tasting menu format. So when we opened, we had full portions. So if I had a piece of beef on, it was 8 ounces. But the menu is big. And I think it was very much more Southern influenced. And that's the difference between then and now, because I love low country cooking, but I've also traveled, as you know, a great deal to France over the last 21 years and many, many times to France and some to Italy and Spain and those and Argentina. And those trips influence me. Every single moment of those trips guide me as a chef, influence, teach me. And lead me down my path of how I'm going to be cooking and move me forward. So that's how the menu has changed and evolved over the years because of those trips and those influences and my own personal research.
Sure. When I was going to ask you this later, but I'll ask you now, when you're in those dining rooms, when you travel, are you talking to the chefs? Do you ever go back? Do you take notes?
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
Pictures? I take pictures the whole time. Well, especially now. Because of our phones. I mean, again, we're talking about 20 years ago. I was going to whip out a camera in the middle of a 3-star.
That would be very rude.
Oh, God, it would have been horrible. And so, you know, it was hard for me because I really wanted to visually document my journey. But, you know, maybe every now and then in a casual restaurant or something. I mean, I always had big cameras, too. So, you know, if it was a casual place, I might have taken some photographs, but never in a nice restaurant. And so thank goodness that's changed. And I always had a notebook. Always. I would always have a small notebook. I would keep it in my lap with the pen and try to bring it out as little as possible because things were just so very different the way that you behaved in a restaurant 20 years ago. I mean, you dressed a different way, you behaved a different way. And my last trip to France was by myself, and it was last year. And I my goal was to eat in as many great restaurants as I could, whether it was a 3-star or just a great bistro. It didn't matter how many stars it had. I wanted to eat in all the places that influenced me. Although it did end up that I ate in a couple of 3-stars in the same day.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, please. You know what that means. I mean, turning around and eating a 3-star Michelin lunch. And then like, I would go back, I would walk as much as possible.
Yeah, that's a lot of walking.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And then I would take a nap. And then I would get up and dress and I would go
it's
to dinner.
Work. Sometimes it is work.
Oh, no, that's not work. Not in any way is that work. But it was, I think my stomach doesn't have the capacity that maybe it did at one time. But I mean, or maybe it does because I did do it. But anyway, you know, just being able to eat like that and take photographs. And also, one of the other things that's changed greatly for me is that there are a lot more women in 3-star Michelin restaurants than there used to be none. I mean, if you saw a woman 20 years ago as a somm, never going to happen. I mean, I never saw a somm, a female somm 20 years ago. And there were rarely any women on the staff. And if they were bussers or, you know, doing. And now they're captains. I'm so proud of
that. That's so encouraging.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so proud. And somms. I mean, they're managers and they're chefs. I mean, it's
awesome.
It's so exciting. I have goosebumps right now. And I on this past trip, I had a couple of female servers, and oh my gosh, I had so much fun with them, and the attention that I got was really very kind. And so I didn't feel like I was eating by myself. And quite frankly, please don't feel sorry for me, because it's a great, every moment of it is a learning experience for me and an inspirational experience for me. And it's better than I'm by myself because all I do is think about the food.
Yeah,
I'm not distracted by anything.
Right.
And so I don't have to converse with anyone. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to entertain anybody. I just get to be. And that means I can watch the service. I can watch every aspect of everything that's going on in the room and enjoy every single bite of everything that I eat. And to answer your question, of course, if I can get back in the kitchen, oh, heck yeah, I am back in the kitchen. And that means a visit. I mean, you know,
so they know you're a chef. You're identifying yourself.
I will admit
yourself.
That I always say I'm a chef. And mm-hmm. if a concierge, well, and I've been staying in the same hotel in Paris, the Balzac, Hotel Balzac is on Rue Balzac. It's just right off the Champs-Élysées. And I've been staying there for 24 years. Tony and I went there and stayed there on our honeymoon. Aww. So I've been staying there since then. And those concierges, they're all the same ones.
Oh, how lovely. Yeah, well, they know you're coming.
Head concierge.
You must get the red carpet then.
I mean, these guys are, oh my God, they're my friends. Mm-hmm. They're my French friends. I mean, I email them when I'm not there. You know, I bring them gifts. When I go to market, I always bring them cheese and they, oh my gosh, they love me.
I bet. Ply them with cheese.
Oh yeah. And pastry and fresh bread. I often go to market. I try to go every day when I'm in Paris and, you know, I've got to get a little something and then I get so excited. I also buy too much. So then I bring it back to them. But yeah, they take care of me and they're the ones that always make my reservations. So of course they're telling people, well, actually I think they tell people I'm an extremely famous American chef.
That's true.
Probably like the best in the, you know, I don't know. But I don't know what they say, but they must say something really, really nice.
That's so nice.
Oh, they're so, oh God, I love those guys.
I know just from following you on Instagram and knowing you through the years, you're so excited by these trips and you're so excited to get back into your own kitchen.
Oh, that's true.
You're probably as happy to see the trip begin as you are for it to end so you can get back to work. So what's on the menu tonight? Give us a little preview.
Well, the exciting thing about sitting here with you right now is that I have a 42-person wine dinner tonight, and I have a 20-person banquet, and I have a 10-top. So we're under...
we feel honored.
Well, no, but we're under some serious pressure tonight. So when that happens, I've already built up my menu in anticipation of tonight. So that my concentration is on the 42-person wine dinner that, you know, these are people from a wine and food society. I mean, it's their thing. So it's tremendously exciting for me to get to cook for them. I can tell you what one of their courses is, which is one of my favorites that I've ever made, which is pan roasted turbo, which is from Spain. This fish comes from Spain. And turbo is it's a flat fish. So, and it's one of the sweetest, prettiest fish I think you can eat. So think Dover sole. Maybe less expensive, think flounder, or more expensive, think halibut,
delicate.
Which is also, halibut is typically a very large flat fish, can weigh 30, 40, 50, way over that pounds. These turbos are, you know, they're 2 pounds each. So they're little guys, but the fish is so beautiful. So we pan sear it, and I mean, it cooks in like a minute. It's so fast.
Wow.
And then we put a seared piece of foie gras on top. And then I make a carrot puree. It's so pretty because it's perfumed with just a little bit of passion fruit and fresh orange juice.
Oh.
And so when we cook the carrots in the water, we put just a tiny bit of salt, sugar, fresh orange juice, and maybe like a tablespoon of passion fruit just to sort of let them, because obviously when they boil, they're absorbing, right? They're absorbing that water. So we want that water to taste as good as it can. And if that's what's going to, influence the dish. If that's what's going to influence the dish, then I need a little bit of it from the very beginning during the absorption process. And then when we go to puree it, which this time we do in the blender. So it's like, it becomes like carrot mousse. It's just so almost like airy, but not airy. It's so delicate on the palate, and it's informed by also a tiny bit of butter, a tiny bit of cream, and those other flavors, which really there's so little of it, it just kind of whispers across your palate. But you get the beautiful texture of the pureed carrot. Oh my gosh, this
sounds amazing.
So good.
I haven't had lunch yet.
Oh, me either.
You don't want to know what my lunch is.
Yeah, unfortunately for you, I've had two coffees, so I'm a little,
I can tell,
I'm a little hyped
good.
Up right
no,
now.
No, that's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
We're honored.
Sugar. It's like, woo!
What was the inspiration for that dish?
I have no idea. Yeah. It didn't come from anywhere.
Yeah.
It came from my head. Most of my food, a lot of my food comes from my head. Then other things are inspired by my trips. But a lot of the things that I do just come from, I mean, especially now, I mean, it's always been this way for me, but when I close my eyes and there are no distractions, that's where a lot of my food ideas come from, because I really have that time to concentrate. And now, especially with all the things that distract us, which are tremendous, I really need that time to just, I have to literally, if I'm planning in the morning before I go into the kitchen, I have to, phone goes away. I don't have a house phone. So, you know, everything gets turned off and away, and I just sit there and think and maybe look at a book or something, but I'm making notes. And so that dish literally came from nowhere but me.
As a writer, I can relate to that. Sure. It's the act of creation. So, and it is an art form. I know you mm-hmm. think that as well.
Oh, definitely.
You need that quiet and that time for reflection. And I'm sure people ask you all the time, where'd you get that idea? They ask me that about stories, and it just comes to you if you allow that kind of quiet space to happen.
Well, especially when you have experience.
Yeah,
I mean, if you didn't have your years of experience and your years of life on this planet,
it would be terrifying.
Same thing for me. Yeah. I mean, in the beginning, things didn't come to me like that, let me tell you. But, now.
Are some favorite moments in the dining room? I know this is a broad, sweeping question. And I know our listeners probably would want to hear about Julia's people contacting you.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit about that moment, or were there other moments that just stand out for you? And they can just be quiet moments. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be having Julia in your dining mm-hmm. room.
With Julia Child, it was the greatest moment of my entire life, I have to say. And I might even cry just thinking about it, quite frankly. She was an amazing woman. And I think she was maybe 6'2". She was very, very tall. She was not in the best of health when she came to Charleston. And even still, she was a vibrant, astonishingly kind and joyous personality. I mean, she walked in and you could feel her a presence the moment she walked into Charleston.
And this was lunch, right?
This was lunch.
Nobody, so it was a private lunch.
It was a private,
not open.
Correct.
For lunch.
It was 1999. So how this came about, and I can't remember the name of the society she was, I think it was the American Institute of Food and Wine, but I'm not sure. She was coming for their board meeting, and then some local people were in charge of entertaining her while she was here. And they are good guests of ours and have been forever and still are. And I love those people. I will be thankful to them to the end of my days for bringing her to me. And I think the husband called me and said, you know, Chef, could you, we're in charge of entertaining Julia Child. Could you make lunch for her? I'm like, what? Yes. I'm like, oh my God, what? Yes. I can make breakfast for her. I can make a midnight. And that's exactly what I said. I remember saying I would make breakfast for her, a midnight snack for her. I would do anything for Julia Child. Are you kidding? Bring her in. When's she coming?
Awesome.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And I looked at my chef de cuisine, who I adore, and he has his own restaurant in Pennsylvania now, but I looked, and he's like my brother. And even grew up in the same town where my mom and dad are from, York, Pennsylvania. And I looked at him and I'm like, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. Julia Child is coming in here. And I said, you're not touching any of the food, or nor is anyone else. And get out of the kitchen right now, because I have to do this all by myself. And I did. I'm like, just everybody get away from me. I mean, it's the only time in my entire career where I'm like, just leave the kitchen
you
now.
You literally did everything.
Oh, I did everything. There was no way anybody was touching that food but me. And it was only, you know what, it was four of them. So it was Julia Child. She had an assistant who
Stephanie.
I think Stephanie, who I have a feeling she probably loved and adored and was probably very helpful to her, but
yes.
I certainly don't know anything about it. But yeah, she and Stephanie came, and then the couple that were entertaining the Wards. And so I really thought about that menu. And of course, I talked to Tony about it, because we had to pair wines, because we knew Julia Child would drink wine with her lunch. And how much fun was that going to be?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then I thought, I knew I wanted to do sweetbreads for her, because that was at a time, that was 19 years ago. That was at a time when no one was really working with sweetbreads. I've always loved sweetbreads. And it stems back to the fact that my father was a butcher, or, you know, when he was growing up, his father was a butcher, and my dad grew up in the outside of the butcher shop. And so because of his love for all those sorts of parts of the animal and understanding of how to cook them even as well, I grew up with a total respect for everything, all parts of the animal, and eating and fine dining restaurants when I was a kid, like at the Whitehall Club in Chicago. Back then, they would serve sweetbreads and, you know, smoked salmon and hearts of palm and Dover sole and all these things. You know, you and I have talked about this a little bit.
Because now you see sweetbreads on, you
everywhere.
Know, everywhere. Yet they're not really a delicacy
19 years
anymore.
Ago, not.
And they're on menus where they shouldn't be.
Well,
you would never order them.
You have to know how to cook them. One of the cool things about sweetbreads is that when I went to Argentina and we were in Buenos Aires and one of the, I'll call it a mall, but it was like a beautiful shopping area. It's mall is not the right word for it.
Cut into the cliff or something.
Right, right. You would go, like, they would have these little restaurants in the shopping areas and they would serve grilled veal sweetbreads. And I'm like, where am I? I need to move here right away. What is
Try getting that
right
at the Towson food court.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's not like, yeah, anyway. So, making sweetbreads for her was very important to me, but I had not been to Argentina yet, so I was still doing them in the French style, which would be still purged, poached, and pressed, remove the membrane, but then you would pull them into pieces, not slice them, and I would pick up, lightly dust them with flour, saute them in clarified butter, and then, you know, add wild mushrooms. I know for her, I added fresh fava beans, which was, I think, one of the first times I ever was able to find fresh fava beans.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. And now you can get them all the time. Well, not all the time, but when they're in season. And then deglaze that pan with chicken and veal stock, finished with a little bit of fresh lime juice, just to balance out the richness of the dish. And she loved them.
Did you sort of spy on her a little bit?
Like, you know, I was busy cooking, mm-hmm. but I will tell you, by the fact of spying on her, was that I couldn't see her from where I was because she was in the back corner of the wine library. So I went out to her, not after the first course, but after the second course. I couldn't stand it anymore. So I had to go out to the dining room and talk to her. And when she came in, she came right up to the kitchen and talked to me. And it was, so I had already met her. It wasn't like I hadn't gotten to speak to her yet. And when she came up to me, she, like I said, she couldn't have been more gracious, more kind, nicer to me, more, you know, she asked me a million questions. It was immediately all about me. And I'm like, oh, no. We're not
That's
talking
amazing.
About me. You're an amazing woman. Here's this famous person standing in front of me asking about me. And I'm like, no, I want to ask you like a million questions right now. And then when I went out to the room, she said, why haven't I heard of you? You should have a cookbook.
I remember her. I remember you telling me that.
And I just thought, well, then I'll be working on that.
I know. Are you still working on a cookbook?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Was that the moment that inspired you
to do absolutely. It? Oh, yeah. absolutely. And I love books. I mean, books are one of my favorite, and I love cookbooks. So for my work to be in a book would be one of the greatest things to me. And I have not found a publisher that's interested in me, which is hard for me to understand, quite frankly. And I just...
Are you listening, publishers?
Yeah, please listen. I don't know. I don't know how to get... I feel one of the reasons I left my farm is because I may be to the point where I'm going to self-publish. I do feel that I want to be in control of it. And my niece is an amazing photographer. And I would like to be in charge. Now, if somebody wanted to publish me, I would be happy to listen to somebody. But until that happens, I may have to do it on my own. It's putting people together that can help me. But mostly I just need to get the discipline to actually measure everything out for a recipe. That's the hardest part for me, quite frankly. I find that to be a challenge. Yeah, because I don't cook that way.
Yeah.
And no chef measures.
No.
Unless you're a pastry chef.
I've seen you
cook. Have to. Oh, yeah.
I've seen you cook. It's amazing. There goes the butter, the cream.
Yeah. I mean, there's no joy to measuring.
Yeah.
When I have to make a pastry.
Well, that's a true cook.
Oh, yeah. Well, if I have to make a pastry, I start to get all like fouled up. You know, I'm like, oh, I have to look at that recipe again. What did it say?
Right.
You know,
baking is not forgiving.
Yeah. I hate measuring things.
And you can't taste it in between.
Yeah, so. Right?
Yeah. I've learned.
Well, and I can't eat raw flour now, which is really irritating. So I can't even taste the batters when I make pastry. Yeah.
You know, I interview chefs all the time. I think you know that. I'm in kitchens mm-hmm. all the time. I've never talked to any chef outside of Baltimore, in Baltimore, who is more passionate about food and gets me more, you know, so excited about eating the things that she describes. You're just so, so good at it. So you definitely have a cookbook in you. I'm wondering how you stay inspired. I mean, it's hard as an artist to create. And tonight you're excited, today you're excited about tonight's dinner, but then tomorrow you have to start again and again. I liken it to the blank page. I write a story, it's great, I labor over it, it comes out, I'm satisfied. And then the next month, because we're monthly, it's like Groundhog Day. And mm-hmm. it's tiring, it's exhausting, it's not always inspiring. You mm-hmm. can't wait for it to be inspiring because it's a trade. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep up your...
Well, none of those things apply to me. Not one.
Really?
Not one. My current chef de cuisine jokes, our joke is, I'm really excited right now. Because I'm wound up. You saw me walk
in
this
really
place.
You're really wound up today.
I'm always wound up.
You are.
And I ask my mother. I was standing on my head doing handstands in the middle of the living room when we had guests when I was growing up. I am hyper. I have always had tons of energy. And even at my age, I still have tons of energy.
Supernatural.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, I'm always on fire. And the thing is that I love what I do. So I don't have to reach for anything. It's always there. It's inside of me. It's in my heart. It's in my brain. I love to cook. And, you know, if there's the greatest inspiration is when I had a farm and I could go up to my garden and pick whatever was gorgeous. I mean, it got to the point where I couldn't wait to go up and see what was, even if it was tiny, I would be like, oh, I can't wait to work with this. And then I would base the dish around it. Or, you know, unfortunately, we've had a horrible growing season. I am so sorry for our farmers.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, one of our farmers said, we just don't have anything.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry for you. This is your livelihood, for goodness sake. So this was a tough growing season. So even with that, I mean, I find inspiration in anything, literally in anything. I can go on the walk-in, or maybe even, you know, not getting food, as much food from the local farmers this year. You know, I can walk down to a grocery store and I might just walk in there and look to see if there's something that hits me. Because walking into my walk-in, you know, it's not everything in the planet in there. It's mm-hmm. only what we need. So sometimes I do need a visual suggestion. That is why I look at books. That is why I have thousands of cookbooks on the third floor of my home. It's unbelievable. So if I need inspiration, I look at a book. Or I go to a grocery store, or I go to a farm, or I drive around, or I look at a piece of art, or I just sit there and I'm quiet and I think. So, or I get to take a trip, or it's time to take a trip.
So I'm making a connection here. I know I was thinking about this on the way in. You love cars.
I
think you went on some car tour where you drove like really fancy cars.
Oh, yes.
You can tell I'm not such a car person.
Yeah. Two Lamborghinis, two Ferraris, a Corvette, and an Acura.
So I'm wondering, Acura, that doesn't fit.
It was
an
NSX. Oh, my gosh.
Was that your favorite one?
Oh, it was. Well, not visually, but to drive. Yes, ma'am.
So is this your need for speed? Is this part of it? This is the connection I'm making.
Are you talking about the car?
So your love of cars, and I'm thinking, like, because when I
kidding? I do have the need for speed.
Yeah, but is that...
I'm built for speed. I always say I'm built for speed. I am Top Gun. I am Top Gun. I am Viper. I mean, I am like Tom Cruise, only I'm a girl, so I don't know what I am then. But it's like, oh my God, I'm built for speed.
But is that why you love it so much?
Oh God, I love everything. Okay, you know, it's funny listening to you talk about, you know, well, we have a deadline or we have to do this and I have to come around to it. That is the beauty of my work. Okay, I am not an unintelligent person. I could have done very, very well in college, okay? But for me to sit in a classroom and listen to some professor talk about trigonometry or whatever it was, I don't have the attention span for that.
Doesn't compare to what you do.
No, I can't do that. I could not. If I had to sit in an office, I would go crazy. So I would.
We do that here sometimes.
Yeah, no, I can't. Yeah, I understand. I would too. So I am not built for that. I am built for the fact that I get to do something different every day. Every night during service is a different night. We can plan. We can take so many reservations on the half hour. We can, you know, our people are people are trained. Okay, we plan things, but in the restaurant business, in the end, there's nothing planned because the guest walks in and they're 20 minutes late because there was a car accident on 83. The guest walks in and three of their people join them and they're an 8-top instead of a 5-top. You can't plan for anything. I mean, you can try, but in the end, mm-hmm. each night is different. And that's what's exciting to me. I love that. I love knowing that each, and also that's one of the things I tell my cooks, look, if if you're training, you're new, you had a bad night last night, that was yesterday. Today's a new day. I don't care what happened yesterday. You learn from the mistake. Today's a new day. We go forward.
So where does the car thing come in, though? Where does that?
Oh my gosh!
How is that?
I mean, like, where did it? I don't know.
Yeah, how is that?
It's a part of me too.
It seems like
I should have been a race car driver. Oh, I totally should have.
It except seems it would like have a disconnect. Yeah, I mean, I found out that
how much
you love cars, I was just I don't know.
If I could drive 180 miles an hour everywhere I went, I would be so happy. Like, I want to live out west. If my dream place is Jackson Hole, Wyoming, but not in the town. I would like to live in the mountains.
Beautiful.
In a cabin. See, it comes back to not having anybody around me.
Yeah, well, that's where you go.
But then I would go into town and see the people. But if I could live out there, then I could drive on, well, you're not allowed to, but if they would let you drive on those roads at 120 miles an hour, right. I would be the happiest person in the world.
Wow.
But I don't know. I have a need for speed.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So let's talk about James.
Danger. You know what comes down to danger.
Yeah,
I work in a business
where
look at my arms. I have burns on both of my arms.
How many do you have?
Three.
Have you counted? Oh.
I don't normally count, but
doesn't
I know I have three. But
how about knife scars?
No, that's rare.
No.
I have one horrible one from when I was an apprentice on one of my fingers. And it's, you know, it's like a dent's gone, but no, that doesn't, you know, no, but it is the kind of, you know, in the end, it's adrenaline. What it really comes down to is adrenaline. It is. And when you're driving too fast, you know, you're taking a risk because a police officer might pull you over. Sorry, police officers. I do have great respect for you. you know, there's always that sort of adrenaline aspect. And that's what it's like to work in a kitchen, quite frankly.
So,
it's adrenaline.
So true. So the Beard Award. So what does it feel like to be nominated? What was that first time like? And does it get old now?
Okay. So how much time do we have? The first time, I'm trying to remember what year was the first year I was nominated. I want to say it was 2006.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think it was 2006, and then I didn't get the, you know, and there is a difference. You get in the semifinals, and I think I've been in the semifinals like 12 times, 14 times, I don't know.
And how many people make it to that, you know?
That's, 10 per region, and there are 10 regions. And then it goes down to 4 per region, and there's still 10, obviously 10 regions. That's right. 10 regions. Yeah. So it's either 4 or 5. I think some regions are slightly bigger, so they may have 5 nominees.
It's a big
finalists.
Deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whether you're in the Mid-Atlantic or the Great Lakes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like getting nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah.
I mean, truly for chefs, especially now. I mean, at first it was like, you know, whatever, you know, it used to be in the ballroom at the Essex House Hotel in New York. And then, you know, the first time I was I won the nomination. So you have a semifinals first, like I said. So that's 10 people for each region. And then it goes down to the finalists. So I've been a finalist 7 times, which means
incredible.
You're going to the awards. Yeah, and you're going to
Chicago now.
Now it's Chicago. It was always New York. And then for some reason, because that's where the James Beard Foundation is, and that's where James Beard lived, which is what the foundation is all about. And then at some point, they decided to do it in Chicago. And the first year we went to Chicago, it was for 3 years, and they must have liked it, or Chicago talked them into it or something, because it's there for, I think it's 2 more years. Mm. So Chicago is benefiting greatly from this. I mean, their chefs are getting a ton of attention. Their restaurants have to be really benefiting. So good for Chicago.
I was just there last week getting my way through town.
It's a beautiful city. I grew up 100 miles away from there, so I grew up eating in Chicago when I was a kid, and it's one of my favorite cities in this country. It is a spectacular place.
So being nominated,
So what it feels like is I get very excited every time, I'll admit it. And every time I lose, I tell myself, I'm not even going to think about it the next time, because I literally become very disappointed.
Oh,
and that's
of course.
I have to say in 2006, I'm sure I didn't think I was going to win. So it wasn't as big of a deal maybe back then, but I've been nominated, the last 5 years in a row? And whatever
it is.
Amazing. Yeah. And
then everyone's telling you you're going to win because we love you in Baltimore.
And that's
makes
that's,
it worse.
Honestly, it kind of does.
All right. Nobody say that this year.
Yeah. Nobody tell me that. But I mean, honestly, I do. Every year I have to admit I get very, very disappointed. And I get very excited when I get nominated. Because I'm proud of that. I am.
How
I'm,
could you
I'm,
not
I'm,
be?
Yeah,
it's
I am.
Huge.
I'm very proud of it. And I'm proud of my staff. And I'm proud of my cooks. I mean, some of my guys have worked for me since when we had Savannah. That's 22, 23 years ago. I mean, I'm thankful for the people that work for me. I love them. They are my family. I mean, you talk about, you know, time off. Well, you know, I mean, I went on a trip to Aruba with my family and I couldn't wait to get back to my cooks, quite frankly, because I missed them. And I love my family, but I spend a heck of a lot more time with my cooks than I do with my family. And that's one of the sacrifices, frankly, you make.
How many hours in the kitchen are you?
You know, it depends on the week. And honestly, when I first started, when, you know, for many, many years, I worked 6 days a week. I worked, you know, 12, 14 mm-hmm. hours a day. Sometimes I worked 7 days a week. I mean, it because we had so many restaurants, and if I wasn't, you know, we were closed at Charleston on Sunday eventually. I think we were only open on Sundays at Charleston for like 8 months, and then we decided it wasn't working out. So
Did you ever cook? I know you sometimes cook at Petit Louis, but back in the day, you spent a lot of time.
I did spend a lot of time at Louis in the beginning. I love Louis so much. I love bistro cooking so much. I love that kitchen. It's a cute little kitchen. It's just it. I always feel when I'm there like I'm home.
Mm. Well, you almost are now back in the Roland Park area. Back to the Beard Award just for a minute. If the judges are listening, we hope they are, what would you want to say to them about why you think you should win? You make your pitch.
Mm-hmm. I cook in my kitchen every day, and this really is my life. And I hope to do that until the day I can no longer physically be in my kitchen. I see no end to being a chef. This is me. I am a chef. I was born to do this. My grandfather was a butcher. My great-grandfather was a butcher. And the fathers before that were farmers. The women in my family are great cooks, both sides. People used to come to my dad's mom's house that were homeless because they knew they could get a good meal from her.
Oh, that's really touching.
Oh, my gosh. And she was a Mennonite, so she was a very giving. And my dad used to talk about how she would sing gospel.
Yeah.
In the kitchen, gospel hymns in the kitchen, and yeah. Anyway,
so lovely.
I'm meant to do what I do. So,
you're a very giving person too. That comes through
you. Thank you. But you know, I have people that have worked with me for a very long time. I've worked hard to train my cooks, and they're very good at what they do. They deserve to be recognized. I really think you know that's it. I wish that my staff could get that recognition and the ability to have it on their resume, that they deserve that to say they worked for a James Beard awarded chef. And that's front of the house and back of the house. I mean, that builds people's resume. That builds their future. And I want them to have that, as well as I think, you know, I want my town to be recognized. I mean, I think that Baltimore doesn't get the recognition that it deserves. It's a wonderful city. Do we have problems? Yes, all cities do. But my goodness, there's so many great things to do here. We have some of the greatest museums I've ever been to. We have two major sports teams. We have a beautiful aquarium. There's so many things. And
so
it's
true.
And it's
and
a
we have
beautiful
Charleston.
Place.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you from all those drives I take, it's really pretty out there in the country. And I used to live out there.
I mean,
this is a beautiful area.
Well, this is actually a great time to take a break because when we come back, we're going to segue into talking about your new home, we're going to talk about the kitchen. We're going to talk about holiday recipes a little bit. And then we're going to have some fun with some quick lightning round questions that I think will have you laughing and keep you on your toes.
All right. I'm up to the challenge.
If you're looking for good stories about Baltimore, we recommend the Stoop Storytelling Series, a popular live event and podcast that features extraordinary true tales from ordinary folks. Find out about the Stoop's live shows and podcast at stoopstorytelling.com.
So welcome back, Chef Wolf.
Thank you.
To Baltimore Boomerang. I want to talk about your new home and your kitchen, but first I do want to ask you just what's it like to be a female chef? It seems like there are more and more female chefs now than
Definitely.
There were ever before.
I graduated from culinary school, so I went to the Culinary Institute of America, which is in Hyde Park, New York, from 1985.
Oh, that little place, Harvard of cooking schools.
I was there from 85 to 87. There were very few women in my classes, and there were very few women at school. And I know that that has changed dramatically. So I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited that women recognize that this can be a career for them. I think that's a big deal. And the more women that are in the business, the less issues there will be for women in the business, I believe, but as there's some sort of balance. But I think in the end, if I were to give anyone a piece of advice about handling yourself as a woman...
You read my mind.
Oh, good. if I were to give you a piece of advice on how to handle yourself in the kitchen, I would just say, you need to be the best you can be. Don't worry about anything else. you know, be professional, you know, don't set yourself up for problems, but be professional. And if you're the best you can be, and if you're meant to be in this business, you'll be good. So you're not, I really truly believe if you're doing that and you're still having some sort of a problem, you need to move on to another kitchen. That's what it comes down to. There are too many good kitchens where mm-hmm. there aren't issues.
Yeah. It's like any job.
Exactly. You just mm-hmm. need to go find the place where you are happy and comfortable, because our business is so demanding and so stressful. The last thing you need is some sort of horrifying, scary personal thing happening to you. Right. So there's no room for that.
So, what do you eat when you're at home? I know eggs is one thing.
Yeah, I love eggs. And eggs, you know, you can do 1,000 different things too. So I do eat breakfast at home, you know, fresh fruit or I will occasionally make eggs and bacon and yogurt and things like that. But if I'm at home, I'm going to make, say, Sunday evening. I often make dishes with beans. I often braise things. Mm. In the wintertime, it's always going to be something braised, slow cooked. I just bought sauerkraut, so I'm going to, I was going to on Sunday, braise the sauerkraut with pork and potatoes, because that's a very right. traditional dish to my family.
Yeah, and Baltimore too, sauerkraut, right?
I don't know that, yeah. frankly, but probably, because my family's from 45 minutes away
right.
from here, so that
mm-hmm.
makes sense. But it's the German influence, the Pennsylvania Dutch influence in my family. And I cook very often long, in the wintertime, long cooked dishes, soups or stews or braised dishes. And then in the summertime, it's grilling. I love to grill outside.
Me too.
I just love
thing.
Cooking outside. I mean, being stuck in for most of my career, well, I guess not anymore, that I've been at Charleston for 20 years. But prior to that, kitchens were in basements or in places where you had no daylight.
Oh,
and
never
to be
thought
able
about
to
that.
Cook outside yeah. is one of my greatest pleasures. I love it. So I don't have a grill for my new house, so I have to decide what I want to do. But this spring, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I may not wait. I mean, I have no problem popping outside in the snow and grilling. It's
sure.
kind of fun to me. So, but yeah, I love to grill.
Get
the summertime.
Propane right in the ground. So any holiday cooking traditions?
Oh, yes. One you probably won't appreciate, which is my family. My mother makes this thing called sausage. I can hear somebody that I work with laughing at me right now as I say this. My mother makes sausage casserole. I'm just going to say it loud and fast.
Well, you are from the Midwest.
Oh, my gosh. And I have to tell you, every single person in my family loves it. So my sister will make that for Christmas morning. So she'll make that. I don't make it. But
what's in it besides sausage?
It's sausage and cheddar cheese and croutons and cream of mushroom soup.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it has milk with eggs and dry mustard that you put on top of the...
it's delicious.
Oh, it's so good. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay. And we all like, you know, it's so non-chefy.
I love
you know?
That you eat that.
I'm a normal yeah. person, man. I'm like, I love that thing. And I only get to eat it like once a year. So my sister will make... Oh, and then my sister also make... You're asking me about my traditions, but they're all our families. And my sister ends up doing the cooking.
Yeah.
So she makes this, this Jell-O thing that has like cranberry Jell-O. I know. It's not what... Cranberry Jell-O, and it has like cranberries in it and like pieces of pie. I don't know what in the world's in that thing, but my niece and I are like, you have to make that.
It's so unexpected.
Oh, yeah. And then the fun part is that we also have Persian night, because my brother-in-law is from Iran, so I cannot wait for like kebab and you know, the saffron rice with the tadig and all the...
Think I know why you love it so much, because you're not doing the cooking. The people love are doing it.
Oh, yeah, and it's really good. It all tastes really good. Oh, totally. I'm like, it's like the greatest
I'm gonna
time
have
of
you
my
over
life.
Jell-O.
Okay, there you go. See, that's all you have to do is make me Jell-O. And oh, it also brings back childhood memories, for goodness sake, and all those wonderful family memories. But and then I cook one night, because obviously my sister's been doing all the work. So I usually do something with beef tenderloin, or like last year I brought magre and a cooler on the airplane. So that and at Thanksgiving I'm going to be at Charleston, but I may get to go home for a day or two. So if I do, I'll probably take magre and foie gras and you know, Hop and John or something like that, and that way I can knock that out and have a really beautiful, you know, we're getting fresh chestnuts right now, and maybe I'll make chestnut stuffing, something like that.
I just roasted some the other night. They're really dry. I think I did it the wrong way.
No, you just only roast them for like 5 minutes. So
oh,
that's the thing. Yeah, five
that
minutes at 300 150. It takes no time. And the other thing is if they come to you dry, they're never going to be anything other than dry.
I did 475 for 20 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what the package
did you
said.
Burn them? Oh, my gosh. Ew, that's gross. I don't cook anything at 475 degrees.
That's what it said on the package.
Oh, God, never read the instructions. Text me. That's only for her, by the
way. Next time. All right. So just very quick questions for you. Just gut response. There are about 10 of them.
I can't wait to hear these.
Yeah. I think I know the answers to some of them.
Uh-oh.
Favorite non-Foreman Wolf restaurant? Doesn't have to be Baltimore.
Oh, La Serre in Paris. You did know the answer to that
I
one.
I did. Guilty pleasure food.
Oh, this is a quick for me. Guilty pleasure food is...
You're thinking too much.
Yeah, I know. Okay, foie gras. Truffles. Truffles and foie gras and potato puree.
Thing that people would be surprised to find in your pantry.
Oh gosh. Karo syrup.
What's that for?
Toast. Oh. My mom used to, when I was a little girl, my mom would put Karo on toast.
Really?
And every now and then, I'll do it.
Interesting.
I like cinnamon toast, too, because of her. I love cinnamon toast.
Me too. Favorite cooking utensil?
Oh, spoons. Different spoons. All kinds of different spoons. Love spoons.
Favorite dress from the Beard Awards?
Oh, last year. I love that dress. It had a little, it was poofy, and it was so pretty. It had a tulle underneath, and it had like little gold sparkly things on it, and you could see through the like netting or whatever. What was it, tulle?
Gorgeous.
What's the stuff on
tulle.
The outside?
Uh-huh.
And then the top had a little, it was a little thing that went around, you know, with
that
dress.
What color was it?
Oh my God, it was cream, and the skirt was pale blue. Oh, I loved it. And then I had a little fur caplet.
Oh yeah, it's coming back to me. Have you worn it since?
No, but I'm tempted to like wear that caplet thing to like bed. You know how women used to wear all that great stuff in like the
My
50s
grandmother.
To bed?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to lay in bed one day and put that thing on and pretend I'm smoking a cigarette
exactly.
and, you know, have
with
a glass of champagne
holder.
Or a martini. Oh, a martini, which I don't drink. You know, do all these things I don't actually do. And oh, I love that dress.
One ingredient you can't live without.
Hmm. Yeah, you're killing me.
I think because you have stock.
Yeah, I mean, I can't work without great sauces. And in order to have a great sauce, you have to have a good stock.
Good answer. Favorite international food city, not France. Don't say France.
Boy. Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Barcelona. Yeah.
Person you'd most like to break bread with? Living, dead, fictional, non-fictional?
I have to say President Obama.
Invite me if that happens.
Oh my goodness, I would love to. I would love to cook for him. If I didn't even get to eat with him, that would be okay. But I'd like to eat with him so I could talk to him.
What a great choice. Food trend you wish would go away.
Oh. There are a couple of. The lack of sauce on a plate, quite frankly.
Oh.
The way that people are plating now, for me, if I'm going to eat your food, I want a sauce on the plate. Yeah. Give me a sauce, a good one. It doesn't have to be stock. I wish it was sometimes, but it's very strange how we've moved away from having incredible sauce on the plate. I don't understand that. There are the whole, you've seen all these, well, I know you've seen all these new plate designs. It's a whole bunch of flowers or petals, which we do some of it because I was growing flowers in my garden. So, you know, that's cool. A flower's pretty. If it tastes good, if it's right, microgreens are fine. If they taste right, if they're right. But if it becomes all about flower petals and microgreens and there's no continuity to the plate, there's no structure to the plate, there's no yin and yang to the plate, there's no salty, there's no sweet, there's no tart, there's no, you know, whatever it is, you need opposites.
It's a diet platter.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm like,
sometimes.
Okay, there's nothing wrong with cream and butter. I understand it doesn't have to be swimming in it, but
right.
Give me the things, the components that need to be on the plate to make food the way it should be. That is when we're talking about European food or most American food. There are other cultures that's totally inappropriate for,
sure.
And that's fine. But with the particularly with French cooking, you know, or French-inspired cooking, that was the foundation of the way it was made. You take away the sauce, I don't know what we're doing.
Do people come in and say, you know, with their special dietary requirements, you know, no sauce, no butter, no this, and then they're just left with a piece of salmon. Does that happen?
Rarely that does
yeah.
that.
Because yeah, they know where they're
rare.
Coming.
You know, we have people with allergies. That's a very
sure.
different story.
Sure.
But thankfully, I mean, honestly, I don't encourage people to change my plates.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a reason why I put it on there. So if you...
Respect the plate.
Thank you. Yes, please. Yes, please.
Favorite.
I beg you.
Favorite celebrity chef.
Oh, sheesh. I mean, that has to be Julia Child. There's no question.
And last meal on earth, what would it be?
Oh, well, it would absolutely have truffles and caviar.
Why not?
And a whole lot of caviar. A whole lot, I mean, like a whole tin of it. and I get it all to myself with some, you know, a little bit of creme fraiche somewhere and some seriously good brioche toast points. I want a whole piece of roasted foie gras, not that I eat by myself, but that I love. That's such a decadent dish to have it roasted. The chef at La Beaugravière in Mondragon in France, he does a dish that's a whole roasted foie gras and broth, and then he seals the pot with the pastry so that, and it has truffles in there, and so that not one bit of that perfume will escape until the pot is open in front of you, break the crust, and then you as the guest get to, oh my God, I have goosebumps again. I'm just like, oh, I want that. And I want extra truffles on the side. Actually, my last meal is at his restaurant. There's no question. I've eaten there many, 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 many times. And many good and bad things have happened during the time that I've eaten. So many moments of my life have occurred around the time that I was there.
Really?
Very significant ones.
Wow.
Both bad and good. And there's some reason for that restaurant in my life.
That's,
and the chef,
wild.
Guy and Tina, are the most amazing people ever. And that's where my last meal would be.
How about dessert?
I don't care about dessert.
You don't.
But I will say that I do love a good souffle. And that comes back to Julia Child, too. Honestly, for me, I love Grand Marnier souffle. I make a chocolate souffle that is also really beautiful. But I love cheese souffle. And I think that comes back to her because she always made that as a big deal. And also, when I was a kid, my mom was a very good cook. She would make cheese souffle like for us for a special luncheon, maybe for our birthday or something. Oh, it was such a treat.
So it's savory.
Yeah. Yeah, I would prefer. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You said
so
dessert.
You're not. Yeah, you came right back. So you're not a sweets person.
Not really. I can do without it. Yeah, I'd rather have cheese. I'd rather have a cheese course. I'd rather eat lots and lots and lots of savory food and hopefully have room for a cheese course than have pastry. I don't care. Maybe a good piece of chocolate.
Yeah. I would start with the dessert. Thank you so much for these full and honest and wonderful answers. Thank you and good luck with your dinner
thank
tonight.
You. It's always fun to talk with you. You are a wonderful, bright, intelligent person and I love you.
Well, back at you, Chef.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the latest episode of Baltimore Boomerang. To hear more podcasts, visit bmag.co/listen.